Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled, Seriously, Won't You Be My Neighbor? And it's about letting other people, strangers really, into your personal life and personal thoughts through art and through music. Our guests for this episode are some folks who know something about letting others into our lives through music. We have Endless Mike, or Mike Miller, Matt Miller of Beagle Club, and you have your own Keebler Tree thing that you do?
Yeah, you know, the one and only Matt Miller.
Yeah, the one and only Matt
Forget
Miller.
Forget all those other Matt Millers you know.
Yeah, that's, yeah. You know, I understand. I wouldn't know about that problem.
At the show yesterday, there was somebody that was like, oh, I thought you were different, Matt Miller. I'm here to see I'm here to see some other Matt Miller.
Oh, no.
He was a little out there.
The fella was a little out there.
And lastly, that voice is Derek Zanetti, who is the Homeless Gospel Choir.
I made it.
You made it. You made it to the podcast. Say hello. Say hello to the folks out there. And
hello.
Hello. Hello, neighbor
world.
Yeah, so you guys are all musicians, songwriters. Why that, and why not, like, go into business and, like, be job creators? Because isn't that what we're supposed to be? Like, you guys have chosen not to be job creators. What's that about?
Technically, I mean, the Beagle Club has, like, 20 people in it, so isn't that kind of a job creator?
Ah, you see, I thought about it the wrong way.
Yeah,
so.
I think maybe that's a job creator. A job where nobody gets paid anything ever.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you're just in that case, under that paradigm, you're just, what, a failed entrepreneur, maybe? You're sort of like...
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, and so you guys, the Millers at least, you guys are based out of...
Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Derek's Pittsburgh guy. I know Johnstown pretty well.
Yeah.
And, thanks Obama and all of that. I guess, is there any special challenges to being... Well, this is sound awful. I have friends in Johnstown who are going to listen to this podcast. You might even know some of these people. So, okay. Being really earnest and honest with your music, is there like a special problem or dimension doing music or at least living in a place where people aren't supposed to have feelings? That's mean. That's awful. I'm a terrible human being. But no, seriously. Like, there's... Because I lived there. I went to St. Francis. I lived in Cambria County for 4 years. And there's sort of like, you get two emotions, righteous anger and depression. Uh-huh. You know, and there's two settings on that switch, and there's nothing else.
It just so happens that's almost exclusively where, that's my wheelhouse anyway. So. Righteous anger and depression. Special challenges to that, I don't think so.
I mean, if you
know,
like,
nobody's going to tell you, right? Nobody's going to say.
Yeah, if nobody has any emotions, they're not going to say, don't do that.
Right.
They're just going to look the other way.
Because, see, you guys have never gotten, like, crap from an audience, and I know, you know, Mike, you got that song, Out of Respect, which is, you know, definitely about the war, and all the wars, actually, but in particular, you know, those wars of the shitty nameless last decade.
Sure.
You know, did anybody ever be like, dude, why do you hate America? What's wrong with you? I watch Glenn Beck or something, you know.
I get some people that want to stand, like, right in front and, like, cross their arms and stare at you while you're doing it. Like, just to, like, to visualize.
Psych you out.
Their disapproval.
Yeah.
You know? But it doesn't bother me. I did have, there was one kid one time, like, it usually never goes beyond that. Like, just the, like, stares. Mm-hmm. You kind of know it. And you kind of feel like, oh, maybe something. But they usually walk out before you're done.
B. Aggressive. Passive. Aggressive.
I love it. There was a kid one time that came up to me and right after a show, and he was like, he was very young, he was probably only like 14 or 15, and he was kind of looking down, and you know, you could tell he was like super nervous, you know? And I thought like, oh, he's going to ask for an autograph, you know? And he goes... And he's,
oh, no.
But he's like, but he kind of like, he goes, I just want you to know, you know, my brother's... He said that, like, his brother was in the military, and that what I sang about offended him.
Mm.
And I was like, I love that you said that to me, because I can tell that it was really hard for you to step forward and say that. And I respect that you're saying that, you know. I mean, he was a kid. I was just like, thanks
for,
you know.
That's the coolest possible way, I think, of dealing with that.
I was like, okay, you know, I'm glad you told me, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's really cool, because I just remember, you know, and I was going to grad school at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, which is also kind of up in the hills, and that town's very schizophrenic, because there's the townies who want to live in Beaver Falls.
Sure.
From This America, not This American Life, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Bedford.
Bedford Falls, right?
Right.
Oh, man, I'm so stupid now. That's
okay.
You know, there actually was a time they were considering in Indiana changing the name from Indiana, Pennsylvania to Bedford Falls in honor of Jimmy Stewart.
Have you been there since they have the talking crossing signals?
Oh, God, that's the most obnoxious and terrible thing in the universe. I don't think it's still open, but they used to have a Jimmy Stewart-themed restaurant.
Oh, yeah?
Where all... You could order, like, a Harvey burger.
I was gonna... What do you... Yeah.
Like, they were all his movies, everything from... Yeah. Mr. Potter sandwich was really good, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so there's those people who kind of, I think, pine for a whiter and simpler America.
Sure.
And then you have Sodom and Gomorrah.
Sure.
Which is the college, where it's just all Animal House and gay people and black, like, people and Arabs.
I lived in Indiana. I was one of like five or six people that lived in Indiana and didn't go to school there ever.
Yeah.
And wasn't from there.
Yeah.
And I still work in Indiana.
Oh,
so I'm there. You know,
you're there all the time. Yeah.
So, through the week, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. It's like if the college disappeared, there would be nothing.
Yes.
And yet. There are people who really wish the college would disappear,
would go away,
so that there could be nothing.
Yes. And I mean, I remember I went through that god-awful 04 election.
Yeah.
Being a student there, and somebody went around on sidewalks and retaining walls with chalk and wrote, "John Kerry kills babies." And Michael Moore came, and I seriously thought, coming and going from hearing Michael Moore speak, I was going to get my ass kicked.
Right.
Like, I full-on was expecting, like...
Really?
Yeah, that there were people there to fuck with people going to see that. And then there were people who went in, because one of the bars in town that I don't think is open anymore was offering free drinks for anybody who would go and scream and walk out. Yeah. And they were all drunk and really mad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was scary.
I remember that, too. That's never been my experience there. I liked it there.
Yeah.
I don't mind being there now.
Yeah.
I think that I'm probably when it's really heightened like that and it's on everybody's mind, then everybody gets ugly and whatever.
Yeah.
But
you know, as like an artist, though, you speak back into that. You know, when you think about that song, Out of Respect, that's just you, which is... It's not like you can hide behind a guitar solo or just, you know... You know, we'll just mix the vocals really low.
There's no more 20-piece in that song.
There's no more 20-piece in that song, or, you know, just... Or something, you know, you can't shred on that.
Yeah.
It's just you in your shit. So
I did.
I always wondered if you guys got, like, crap or you know, the other two.
I get an occasional email.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then, like I said, that kid, that's the only time I can think of. That specific kid. And then a lot of the, like, crossing their hand arms and like, making a show of, like, storming out.
Oh, wow.
I remember a couple times, though, like, would be out of town and do something like that. And when you're out of town, you're really... Like, because you're right. Like, in Johnstown, nobody's really going to say anything. If somebody doesn't agree with, like, any sort of leftism or whatever you want to call it at all, they're probably not going to be at the DIY show anyway. So they probably don't care enough to even bother you. But sometimes you end up, like, you don't know what bar you're playing in Virginia or whatever. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, like, you know, people would do it there, and then often I'd be like, this is it. Like, you know, best case scenario, you know, the van's tires are slashed when we leave, like, in some, like, kind of things. But, like, a lot of times it'll be... that's whenever it's like people still don't really say anything, because I can say this because I didn't write the song. I think it's a well-written argument. It's a well-written piece, and it is obviously one person's opinion. So you can disagree with it, but you're not going to be a shithead about it. You're not going to go up and be like, hey, you know, your well-written piece is wrong. You know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, like, it'll be like the veteran guys will come up to us, and they'll be like, oh, here we go. But then they're really cool. They're the ones that are like, that isn't actually, you know, that's not something to be afraid of saying. That is, I'm glad it was nice to hear that, and it was, you know, I agree. And then they will tell you stories that are just like, you have no idea, and listen to this crap, and like just like lay the heaviest shit on you.
We played a show in Savannah, Georgia one time, and we got there early, and we like set up our stuff, and then we went to Tybee Island to go swimming in the ocean, and we're like, oh, well, we'll get back, you know, before the show, whatever. And then, of course, you know, you just end up swimming in the ocean for too long. So we came back, like, we came back, and the show had already started, and it was like pretty crowded. We're like, oh, this is pretty cool. And there were all these dudes there wearing t-shirts that said Iraqi Veterans Against the War. Do you remember this?
I do.
There was like 12, 13, 14 dudes, and they were all in the matching thing, and they were like, they were there to see us, and they took me out after the show, and we went to a bar to watch a Minor Threat cover band.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, and just, you know, just got, these dudes just got me trashed, and they're telling me all these wonderful, horrible stories and experiences and stuff, and I mean, I guess that was really the best thing that's ever come out of that song, was that, because they talk about that one a lot, you know, about that one song. And it's not the only song that's like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's not political song that we have. It's not the only, it's not even the most, it's certainly not the most aggressive. It's certainly not the most whatever, you know? But I think it's what you were talking about, where there's nothing else going on, you know? Like, it's just singing.
Yeah.
My friend one time was making fun of me about it, and he was like, is that your American Idol audition? Like, you know, it's just singing. So it's right up front. You can't kind of get away from it. So maybe that's why people talk about that one so much. But these guys did, and they talked about it a bunch, and, you know, it was crazy. It was a really fun night and really experience that you know, I never thought I'd have. You know, I didn't know these guys. It was really something.
Yeah. So, does that, though, I guess... And Derek, you played in Alabama this summer, right?
I played in Alabama before. Yeah. Not this last past summer, though.
But, like, how does that go with what you do? Because, I mean, you even will speak out against the sainted quarterback of our Pittsburgh Steelers, which is maybe slightly more more important than God and country, you know, the Steelers. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, one thing, Matt mentioned, you know, you play these DIY spaces and, you know, you say something about, like, LGBT equality and you're saying to a bunch of punks that believe you anyway.
Yeah.
And, like, for the most part, that's where the show happens. You're happening in it, you know, it's happening in an atmosphere and in an arena that, like, everybody is already on your team and you're just sort of, like, stoking the fire a bit.
Yeah.
But I can remember one time I played a show with Dave House from The Loved Ones at Club Cafe, and there were just a bunch of good old boys there with, like, real tree camo hats.
Oh.
Fucking Copenhagen in their lip.
Fishing license.
The fishing license is, like,
right on that.
Pinned onto their hat, and, like, Carhartt, you know, double knee pants or whatever. No, there's anything wrong with Carhartt.
Yeah. Right?
Company, I guess. Yeah, they could be the most comfortable pants ever. I mean, I don't even know.
You don't know,
but it's become a symbol, though.
Sure,
that's why you're.
And they're there. It's become a symbol. And I was doing a campaign, with stickers and artwork that said Amish for Border Control. It was right whenever that whole SB 10 70 thing was going on or whatever, and they were detaining brown colored people in Arizona for up to 4 days and keeping them in jail until they can prove their American citizenship. And I said, like, this guy wanted to come up and, like, debate that with me, like, debate what Amish for Border Control meant. And I can remember saying, well, it's just an idea about, like, being kind to your neighbors and, like, friendship and giving somebody the benefit of the doubt and showing, like, hospitality. And, you know, whenever you go and, you know, you see an Amish person, they always have, like, a loaf of bread and a baby in their hand. Yeah. And maybe if we treated our neighbors with, like, a loaf of bread and a, you know, child care instead of, like, guns and aggression and barbed wire, maybe we wouldn't be known as the Christian nation that hates brown people.
Yeah.
So, like, that was a really interesting, like, conversation I got a chance to have with this guy. And he says, well, let me tell you something about me. I'm a Christian. I was like, of course you're a fucking Christian. Of course you are. I believe you. I believe you. He's like, and I'm a Republican, so I didn't like some of your songs. I said, of course you didn't like my songs. I wrote my songs for you. You're in mind. When I'm writing it, you're the guy I'm thinking about. So sometimes, I mean, you get to have that. I mean, I definitely say certain things to, like, stir the pot and to, like, you know, piss on your shoe for sure.
Even punk
kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it feels good to even, like, rebel against the rebellion.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It does have to eat itself eventually, right? And so, I like what you brought up there, though, this idea of audience and sort of target and sort of who you write for. And so, yeah, I mean, that mix of people and maybe how does audience sort of influence content.
Yeah.
I mean, have you guys ever had the thought, though? I've said too much this time.
Me, I've no. No.
No,
no, and I don't think about, like, I think at one point I had to make a conscious effort, maybe, to not think about, like, an audience. Like, when people started to come to the shows and stuff, and then I'd start to write new songs and think, like, oh, well, people are listening now, you know?
Yeah.
You had to, like, unlearn to care about that kind of. I don't think about who's going to hear it. I don't think about an audience. That is the, you know, the conundrum there of like, that you're kind of preaching to the choir or whatever. You write these punk songs and you play the punks, you know? But, like, I don't know. I like to think that, and I certainly think it's true of Matt, and I think it's true of you too, Derek, that, you know, I'd like to think that we're not just rehashing the same thing, you know? Like, you've played with so many straight edge bands, and they play straight, like, a song. This song's about what? About being straight edge. It's like, you don't need to write a song about straight edge. Like, I've heard straight edge. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that was about, that's pretty well nailed, you know? If you can come up with, like, a better, like, if you can come up to into your personal narrative, into, like, why that's important to you, a different part of it, then that's interesting to me. But sloganeering is not.
Yeah.
Changing hearts and minds is not interesting to me. You know what I mean? I think that music can. I think it does every day.
Yeah.
I'd like to, in your, you know, most confident moments, think that that's possible.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't, I don't think it should be a goal. I think if it's a goal, it's just this anthemic, you know, like, kind of fake.
Yeah.
Because you're still just one person at the end of the day.
Yeah. Though I will say, though, I think for me personally, I'm a college professor now, you know, but it was through music. Well, it was the first time I think I ever really encountered ideas larger than my own head.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
I agree with that for sure.
You know, and ways of sort of thinking through problems from different perspectives.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's totally a place for, like, you know, the most, like, bumper sticker political punk song, you know what I mean? Like, there's totally a place for that, to be like, when you're 13 and you hear it and you say, the government sucks. Like, okay, like, why does the government suck? I know that it does, but now I should figure out why. You know,
yeah.
Like, that's good. That's a good thing.
Great. Yeah.
You know, that's a great thing. It's just not what I'm interested in doing. I don't know how I would, you know, because I think it's been said.
Yeah.
You know, so if we're going to sing a song, like, that song you were talking about, it's about the war, you know, it's not going to be about war. It's going to be about, you know,
a human being affected
by war.
And not just, and
by,
like,
other people's
me.
Ideas of what should happen.
Right. I remember that, you know, that stuff's true.
Yeah.
The guy's kid and you remember, like, after the World Trade Center, it had everybody's names on the ticker at the bottom, you know, like, all the fallen heroes.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have been me. You know, I don't know that I'd have been, you know, I'd have just been at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And that's not to discredit anyone's loss. It's crazy to think that by saying that it would be, but you know, there are people that take
it's
it
even. But in my opinion, it's even crazier to put a political agenda on anybody's loss, on somebody's like personal life, and they're gone, and now they're just a name at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, sure.
Just being another person to
on an endless inspire. Line of ticker tape.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is a weird kind of corruption of intimacy.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing. So the other thing I would talk about is, since you guys' songs are personal, do you find yourself also, if you will, writing for friends or thinking about a particular person, and in a weird way thinking metaphorically, like, this person, I'm never going to tell this person the song's about them, but maybe if they figure it out.
Yeah, let me field this one. I don't write as, I wouldn't call what I do, like, personal to myself. I don't talk about my own, you know, relationships to other people and things, but I am constantly writing about things like where I'm talking to my friends and they're talking about how other people are making them feel and other situations are making their situation worse and stuff like that. And I think that's almost exclusively the way, like, the inspiration for what I'm doing, because I can't, like, whenever they're talking to me, I'll sit there and I'll listen to them and everything, and I love that they want to hear what I have to say, or even that they love that they're saying something, at least, to another person that they trust and everything. But I basically just, I'll sit there and I will, I've written many songs from the point of view of one of my friends, basically. Mm. So, like, my friend will have a lot of scenarios, and she'll bring a lot of stuff to me, and I don't know how to really help her when she's talking to me.
Yeah.
But I know what she's saying, and it's an easy sort of pain relief to make it rhyme, and then hopefully it doesn't make her seem like it's as pointless as she might be feeling like it is. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I think there's something to be said for putting any trauma or any part of your life in some kind of symbolic order.
Yeah, exactly.
That there's a beginning, middle, end, moral to story is, I think, is a great comfort. And I think you're right, because I've had, you know, I don't write songs and I barely write poetry anymore. But that moment when you're in the moment of, and I could say to you, keep your chin up, you know, like one of those like kind of bullshit. Yeah, it's not so bad, is it? Right, guys? Kind of moments.
My universal advice, you know, people, you know, they'll just say, oh, this feels bad. And all I can say is like, yeah, well, you know, fuck them. You know, that's all I got. Yeah. That's all I got to offer.
Which is all we do ever got, right?
You know, is fuck them, you know. Yeah. Who cares what they think, you know. But then, I don't know. But it's a nice thing to think that I feel like it's nice to put what they're trying to get across into something that that emotionally gets it across, and it's sort of a one-sided. Every song is sort of a one-sided argument.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of nice to like just be like, well, this is how it sounded to me, and I promise what you're telling me, it doesn't sound stupid. I know you're self-conscious about it or whatever, but it doesn't sound stupid to me, at least. You know, it's not a great song, but at least it's hopefully understood. You know, at least it's A to B. It finishes its
absolutely
its trajectory.
I wrote that song Musical Preference about my conversation with like all my friends that we have like these talks about music. Everybody wants to talk about music, not just me, but just I think everybody just wants to talk about it, so you can get a feel for like your friend, like, hey, we're new friends, let's talk about music so I know how much I can trust you.
Because
if you listen to bad music, I can only give you so much of my trust, because you probably treat me poorly if you like listen to shit.
I know people like
so,
that
like, I talk about how much like I hate Sublime and how much I hate Fleetwood Mac. However, I have really good friends that are in this very room that love Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Oh.
And like, I have other friends that like that I love and that love me, that Sublime's like their favorite band ever. And I can still be your friend,
yeah,
if you have shitty musical preference, in my opinion.
Yeah.
However, if you listen to G.G. Allin and Mumford & Sons, we can't be friends because I can't fucking trust you. It's like all the other songs I sing about are like, can be like heavy political things, yeah, or whatever. I just wanted to write a song about like, these are my friends. We have these conversations. I don't believe in heaven, but if there is a heaven and I die and we're all there together, Joe Strummer's going to be there and Freddie Mercury's going to be there and we're just going to hang and like, get stoned and listen to records together.
My line in the sand is the Beatles. You know, if somebody doesn't like the Beatles, I'm like, well, it's been okay. I'm gonna just keep walking.
That's understandable.
Right, because like everybody likes the Beatles. Like, how can you know?
Biggest band in the world for a reason.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, the Beatles are overrated.
Yeah, they're really not. They're properly rated.
They are properly rated.
They're properly fucking rated, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt's been saying lately it's they might be Giants. Somebody that doesn't really like, you know. If you only think they might be Giants or a joke band, then we're probably not going
to
have a lot.
It was my New Year's resolution is like to stop trying to have a good relationship with somebody that doesn't like they might be Giants. Because like it's not going to be worth it for me. They don't look at the world. Then I'm probably going to like waste like a lot of like intimate details about myself on somebody that's not going to care. Like if they don't think that they might be Giants, know what they're talking about, or do it in a way that is much more than a tiny tune.
Yeah.
Then I'm probably talking to the wrong person. Yeah. And I should probably find somebody else to talk to.
I think the best one of those I've ever heard was a friend of mine from high school who feels that way about Tom Waits.
Yeah.
Because that's a worldview. That is a worldview. That is a way of thinking about humanity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know. But I guess for me, it's more like genre.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it's like if people are, I think, thinking, feeling, emotional people, you just can't be in the Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Like, you just haven't gotten there yet. You might be on the way, but, like, people who really, but I guess for people whose musical universe ends with that.
Right. Sure.
You know what absolutely. I mean? That's the thing. I guess you could say, oh, that's a pop song, and I get it. But I guess for people who, like, no, that's the limit.
Yeah.
I got it. I filled the box. And there is no reason to think about anything else. Then that's always a moment for me of like, well, yeah, my intimate details. Maybe you're not.
Maybe this isn't a good idea.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
Yeah,
let's just dissolve this relationship.
Because I'm going to say something, and you're going to think I'm joking. Is basically what it is.
Exactly. And so, speaking of that, though. Last thing I want to talk about on our main topic here is, so you guys have these songs, they're very personal, very intimate. How weird is it, even if it's not political stuff, in terms of, like, then you put it out there for sort of public consumption and maybe public misinterpretation? And is that ever sort of a weird, like, feeling of nakedness that...
I bet it's really different for you, Matt, in that, you know, it's not really... what you do, huh? I mean, it's probably the other way around. People hear your stuff and think that you're talking about yourself, and that's probably pretty awkward, but
yeah,
especially some of the, you know, kind of characters and narratives that you're coming up with. On my end of things, I just learned a really long time ago that can't factor into it. The first band I was ever in was with Matt here and two of our friends, and we played, you know, loud alternative rock, I suppose, and we started writing our own songs. We had music and no words, and somebody said, we need a singer. You could be the singer. And I said, okay, well, if I'm going to be the singer, then I have to write the words. And I'm like, well, they were like, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what am I supposed to write about? And they were like, it doesn't matter. Who cares? Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. Mm. And I took it to heart, and I still do to this day. I don't think that it matters. I just, when I'm doing it, I just think, oh, I just can't let it matter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a way of clothing yourself.
So that's where it came
yourself,
from.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. I'm like 16 and singing songs that probably were more embarrassing than than the ones I sing now. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if I could get over that, I'm okay with this though.
Yeah, I don't. Like I said, I don't sing from a personal point of view. I'm not lying about what I'm singing about. Mm-hmm. But I don't. It's not autobiographical. You know.
Mm.
So it is character based, and it's sort of just vibe, and you take what it is. But yeah, I think, like, I was telling Derek the other day in the car how I get confused and how I get sort of bummed, because it's like, if you make any other kind of art form, you don't, it's not presumed that you're speaking about yourself, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you can write Travis Bickle, you can mm-hmm. play Travis Bickle,
yeah.
you can dress Travis Bickle, and you're not Travis Bickle. But if you get up there and you sing from the point of view of Travis Bickle, everybody thinks you're Travis Bickle.
Bickle, yeah.
Yeah, so, but like, I can't think of another art form where that's usually expected, yeah. that you have to get up there and be yourself, that you're, especially yeah. in punk rock.
Yeah.
And stuff, like, you're supposed to get up there and you're supposed to be yourself.
Yeah.
And that only means you have to speak as yourself. I'm being myself yeah. when I'm up there.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about who I love and who I hate and,
yeah.
you know, my job and my this and that.
No, but you're talking about love and hate and jobs.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to mean
this. They're not necessarily through your own various perspective.
Right. I'm not Travis Bickle.
Yeah.
Is my thing. So, like, yeah. that kind of freaks me out a little bit. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I need to, if that's something that I should just not worry about at all.
You never worked in a silkworm factory in Chinatown, New York?
I've never done that.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Yes.
I've never been a, obviously, doctor. You've never been a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It's the same thing. Like, you know, yeah, but that happens to me a lot, and I don't know if I'm, sometimes I feel like it's, like, manipulative, like, mm-hmm. because people just assume that I'm up there and talking about me,
yeah.
but I'm not, and it's a bummer if they want me to be what I just said, or it's a bummer even more so if people are like, who's that about? You mad at me?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like, I'm not even me, let alone you. Yeah. What are you reading into here? Yeah. You know, those
of kinds. Course, you've just made everybody paranoid that's going to hear this, going to playing back conversations they had with you in the past.
Anybody that's had that conversation, I'm sure I told them what you
I'm sure
about.
You did.
I'm confident of that very thing.
And on that happy note, it's time for the bottom five. Bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic, but are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Ready?
Are these five new questions?
There's a pool of questions.
Okay.
I think one is a repeater
okay.
for you. But,
1, 2, 3, repeater.
All right. Question one. If reincarnation is real and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be? Like, if you had to, like, you totally fucked up in life, maybe without even knowing it, and you had to start a single-cell organism again,
uh-huh.
and, like, just, you know, give people diarrhea or whatever, what would you want to be? What germ, what virus?
A top 40 song.
You'd want to be a top 40 song.
Fuck everybody.
I don't know. Maybe the common cold, you know, something innocuous that you could get over. Slows you down for a little bit, but
and
you know,
you're promiscuous there until you get around.
Right, yeah. You get around a little bit, but you know you're not going to really ruin anybody's life. That would probably get you a step higher up the next time around.
Yeah, yeah.
Than it would if you were, you know,
Ebola.
Yeah, right.
You know, you're not making men bleed out of their nipples.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's not technically an infectious kind of thing, but it is a condition. I would be synesthesia, which is a condition in your brain that mixes up your senses. So you see sound.
Oh, that's
and you
right.
smell colors.
Yes.
I'd be synesthesia.
I want that.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. I think that'd
what
be
grown
fun.
Adult doesn't want synesthesia?
All right, question two. What is the limit to experience or personal limitation that most people impose upon themselves?
The limit to experience that is imposed upon themselves.
Yes, that people impose upon themselves.
I don't. It would probably have to be get as far as, you know, until you're afraid. I think that's probably the limit is fear, and if that's of. I don't think that people are driven by wanting to be powerful. They're driven by wanting to not be powerless, by being afraid of being powerless, right?
Yeah.
People do horrible things in the name of that. Yeah. People do horrible things to each other in the name of being afraid to be at the bottom of the barrel, I suppose, and always trying to one-up other people. I'm talking about all the way to the top, your CEOs, your whatever, down to the mailroom. Down in the mailroom, man. Down and so it's probably fear. And you said imposed upon yourself. And that is imposed upon us, right? We can work through those things. We can work through whatever it is that scares us to take the jump. That's my answer.
I don't think
that put you on the spot?
Yeah.
Sorry. Can you repeat the question?
Sure. What's the limit to experience or personal limitation most people impose upon themselves?
I'll answer it. I'll go. The limit, in my opinion, the limit to all of that is universal forgiveness. Mm. Is the fact that Jesus thinks that, you know, that he came with this thing, and now we're all supposed to forgive each other. Mm-hmm. And we're all supposed to say, that's okay. Everything, you know, you're a human being. I understand. You know, I if I can't sympathize, I empathize. But I think that there are people in positions that do things to others that do not in any way deserve your forgiveness. Wow. And I think that the biggest lie is that everything, that this is a nation built on a religion based on forgiveness. That forgiveness is the ultimate goodness. And I don't think that forgiveness is the best thing you can do. I think some things are unforgivable, and some things should go far, far away.
Who's the first against the wall?
Who's the first against the wall? Yeah. Depends on... I mean, it depends on...
But that's weird, because... Are we allowed to do this?
Yeah.
You know, point, counterpoint?
Sure, if you want to.
Do you think forgiveness is really practiced?
Yes.
That's not forgiveness, that's just sort of laissez-faire, that's just how it is, you know?
Well, there's forgiveness, I think, in the abstract. I think there's the idea that people can, it'll be fixed.
Yeah.
That, you know, the theology is Batman's tool belt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in a way, you know, in that episode where they end up in the harbor, just happens to be the episode where he has the shark repellent aerospray. Sure. In his tool belt. And I think there's that theology of...
down the shark repellent.
Yes. There it is! You know, and that's just the one that happens to have the grappling hook.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so I think there is a theology of that.
So maybe if we said that there are certain things which are unforgivable and that we can never let happen again, maybe people would get up and stop these things from happening. Is that what you mean?
I mean forgiveness. I think it's the worst. I think it's the thing that keeps everything else down.
Okay. Yeah.
I would have to say loneliness for me.
Mm.
It's the thing that puts me in prison.
Mm.
It affects and changes my every decision making process.
Mm.
I have this crippling phobia that I'm going to be alone one day, but not like alone in the sense of. No, I'm not going to know anybody because I'm an extraordinarily unquenchable extrovert.
Yeah.
But I have a fear that I'm going to be in a car by myself and I'm going to get trapped and die. I have a feeling that I'm going to be in a room and it's going to catch on fire and I'm not going to be able to say the last 2 minutes of my life how I really felt about a thing because I'm a coward to talk about it now. I'm afraid to be alone, like, at all times, like, even if I, like, all the time, like, I hate it. I'm not good at being by myself. I'm deathly afraid of what it's going to be like. even take a bicycle ride sometimes. Like if I don't have like a buddy to go with me, I probably wouldn't take it just because like I don't have anything of any value or merit I feel to do on my own, and it's paralyzing to me. Right. So I'd say loneliness.
You know what you should do? You should just do it anyway.
Be lonely?
No, no, just be alone. And then you'll find that nothing bad.
Sure. Nothing bad might not happen.
Of course, I say that, and then the next thing you're locked
in a safe. Do you remember Derek's and Eddie? He got kidnapped, and they fucking put him in a cellar and burned his bottom in the harbor without anybody. It's on my idea of fun.
It's on my idea of fun.
It's 3:15 on my idea of fun.
All right, question 3. What's the strangest injury you've ever suffered?
I still don't know what it is. When I was like in fourth grade, anytime I would step down on my left heel, it was excruciating electric shock kind of pain.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was like doctor after doctor and nobody knew what it was. Nobody knew anything at all. And it was just different way to cure it after different way to cure it. And it just stopped one day. But there was never anything that relieved the pain of it. There was never anything that relieved my mind or my parents who were freaking out, like what it was that was causing it. Nothing ever stopped it until one day my body just outgrew it or whatever.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
I would say one or two things. One was about 2 years ago. I was on tour with Harley Poe, which is they're like a horror folk punk band from Indianapolis, and it was my friend Chris's birthday, and we had a doubleheader show in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we smoked a bunch of weed in his Jeep, and then everyone's like, that show was so great, here's a shot, here's a beer, here's a shot, and I could either drink or I could either smoke marijuana, but if I do both, I'm not a good, I can't juggle it.
Yeah.
And I was on stage and I was playing the washboard and I punched through the washboard and a shard of metal gashed my hand and it made me bleed all over the place. And it was right on my knuckle. It was the second day of tour, so I couldn't bend my finger to make the chords. And there was like every time I bent my finger, there's blood all over my guitar and I had to play the rest of the tour with a fucked up finger. I would say either that or when I was about 9 years old, I had my head out the window of my dad's Oldsmobile. And there was an old rusty car in front of us and it hit a bump and a piece of rust came out and went into my eye.
Oh!
And my dad didn't have health insurance for us at the time, so my dad put me in a headlock and grabbed a pair of tweezers and tried to pull the rust out of my eye.
Oh.
And could have blinded me, but my mom's screaming, take him to the hospital! And my dad's like, we don't got insurance, we're doing it at home! Oh. And I'm crying like, this is the worst ever, Dad, can we just go take a look at it? And we got there and the doctor like scolded my dad, was like, if your son gets something in his eye, don't go digging in his eyeball with a pair of tweezers, you fucking twit.
Oh, you know. God. Both of those stories just made my blood quiver.
You asked, man.
Yeah, come on, yeah, bro.
I've lived a pretty boring life, I suppose.
Alright. Alright, so the question 4 then. What's your most irrational pet peeve? Thing that sets you off that you know probably shouldn't.
I don't know, man. I tend to think they're all very rational.
This is a bullshit question.
No, I'm just kidding. I have a very good reason for everything that I have to correct somebody's when in print they use the wrong form of your. I know.
Yeah, well, you remember there was that 56 heading in the Johnstown, that one church that had the sign that was up for years.
She was like your mom did.
Yeah.
See, that's the opposite. We usually see people using the possessive instead of the contraction.
Which is why it's so obnoxious.
And that's what was so powerful. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That seemed to me going out of their way to be grammatical. Right, because viewers at home, choose life your mom did, YOU'RE mom.
Yeah.
Choose life your mom did.
I remember pulling over my car and
somebody must have told them something about it.
Yes.
So they put a thing over it, but it just looked, they put like this like
white tape
one
or
vinyl R over the both, and it looked ridiculous. And then eventually they took it down. Now it says, it's like this huge, like, three sentence thing that you could never read all of in one drive. Yeah. It's like, choosing life is the surest way to God's heart because he loves the unborn, and you should love the unborn too. It's like, that's not what you want to be pithy.
Yes, you want to be pithy, yeah.
Thing, you know? Anyway, I guess that's, I'll go your and your.
My most irrational pet peeve?
Yeah, that just, you know,
makes no sense.
Pretty much. Though you can rationalize it. I'll tell you mine.
Please.
I'll tell you mine.
Okay, yeah.
And this is like, it gets me like, I'll kill you and your whole family, like, angry. When people who don't live in a city but live in, like, a suburb, but say, you know, like, on their addresses, on their label, like, if they live in Westview, they say Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you live in fucking Westview, motherfucker! It's just, for whatever reason, like, I know there's some deep-seated that I can articulate and takes, like, an hour lecture, which, you know, I don't want to drag anybody through, to why that pisses me off, but that gets me to redline anger for no good fucking reason.
So I should say Upper Yoder instead of Johnstown.
Yes! Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But you don't know. You do.
Yeah.
But most people don't know where Upper Yoder is.
Yeah.
They might have a shot at knowing where Johnstown is.
Maybe.
You're putting Upper Yoder on the map, dude.
I'm sorry, you did say irrational.
Yeah.
I'm with you, though, sure.
Yeah.
You know? Whatever fires you up. Assuming the sex of an animal bothers me for no reason.
Oh, really?
Like, it's like, when somebody's like, come here, boy. And they're like, oh, she's beautiful. It's just like, you don't know. Like, why are you assuming the sex of that animal? For some reason, it just really makes me mad.
I get it. All right. No, I like it. And I can totally think through it. Again, it would be an hour-long lecture. Not going to drag anybody through it, but yeah. I totally get it.
Yeah.
All right, question five. And actually, I do want a single group answer. You might have to talk through this.
Survey says. So let's
talk through this.
Yeah.
All right, if you were to murder me right now as a collective, what would you? How would you dispose of my body?
Dispose of?
Yes. If something happened, podcast went bad.
Sure.
You know, mic stand went through my skull.
Right.
And you have the oh fuck moment. We got to make this guy disappear. What do you do? What's the plan?
Derek, you're just going to have to trust me on this?
I'm listening.
Because this works, is what you're saying? Matt and I know the place.
Oh, no, we do. Yeah.
We know the place where a body could be put and no one would ever find it. So please believe us when we say that we're going to be taking Matt there.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's where he's going to
be. And it's going to be an undisclosed place.
You don't even... All you got to do is help put him in the car.
Okay.
Yeah, but let's think about that. Let's think about how we're going to get him to the car.
We know a place.
You know a place.
There's a place on the road between...
Won't say where it is.
It's on the road between Elton and Winburn. And there's a place that we've been that we were just like, if this... No one would ever. No one would ever.
Ever, never.
Never, never, never. Yeah, look for a body or treasure or guns or you know any sort of evidence. There's the perfect place to get rid of that. Like just there's a bottomless pit kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, whole or dismembered? I mean, it's certainly
that's what I'm saying.
Car,
now, how do we get them to the car?
We could just prop you up, Weekend Birdie style.
Just play Calypso and just dance and
put him in sunglasses and a Hawaiian shirt on and bounce him down the steps.
We'll get perfect. To there, buddy. Don't worry.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen and will be about something. Thank you guys so much for doing this, taking time out. I hope the free pizza was worth it.
It was awesome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on the iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook and Google Plus. I think I'm the only person who likes my Google Plus page. It's a party where nobody shows up.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
Well, that's Google Plus for you.
That's the Google Plus for you. Thanks to Brett Zorick, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later, meets.